So is it a dream come true? Or is a nightmare that's about to happen? If you want to grab your copy of the Bible out of the pew, we're going to be in Daniel chapter 2 this morning. And this is what it reads in verses 1 through 8. In the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His mind was troubled and he could not sleep. So the king summoned the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, and astrologers to tell him what he had dreamed. When they came in and stood before the king, he said to them, "I have had a dream that troubles me, and I want to know what it means." Then the astrologers answered the king, "May the king live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will interpret it." The king replied to the astrologers, "This is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me what my dream was and interpret it, I will have you cut into pieces and your houses turned into piles of rubble. But if you tell me the dream and explain it, you will receive from me gifts and rewards and great honors. So tell me the dream and interpret it for me." Once more they replied, "Let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will interpret it." Then the king answered, "I am certain that you are trying to gain time because you realize this is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me the dream, there is only one penalty for you. You have conspired to tell me a misleading and wicked thing, hoping the situation will change. So then tell me the dream, and I will know that you can interpret it for me." King Nebuchadnezzar, he was known to be an unstable man. He was also known to be a very cruel leader. He was a demanding individual. However, this demanding individual had a dream. Yeah, it's not the dream that we usually think about when somebody says, "I have a dream." He literally had a dream. And the dream was of a statue made of six different materials. And the dream is so disturbing that he called together, and again, look at the list, all the magicians, all the enchanters, all the sorcerers and astrologers. And he looks at them and he says, "Interpret the dream for me." And it makes good sense, because I know if somebody called me into an office and said, "Hey, look, tell me what's going on here," the first thing I'm going to say is, "Tell me the dream." But this dream has had a really bad effect on Nebuchadnezzar. He trusts nobody. He knows this dream is not like any other dream he's ever had. And he says, "I'm not going to tell you the dream. If you can interpret this, then you know what? You should be smart enough to tell me what the dream is also." So either, how's this for job security? Tell me the dream, interpret the dream, or you're not fired, you're dead. Not only are you dead, we're going to bring the bulldozers out, we're going to go find your houses and your family, and we're going to wipe out your family, and I'm going to bulldoze your houses to the ground. Tell me the dream. And well, they fail. Daniel chapter 10, verses 10, chapter 2, verses 10 through 13. The astrologers answered the king, "There is no one on earth who can do what the king asks. No king, however great or mighty, has ever asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or astrologer. What the king asks is too difficult. No one can reveal it to the king except for the gods, and they do not live among humans." This made the king so angry and furious that he ordered the execution of all the wise men of Babylon. So the decree was issued to put the wise men to death. And men were sent out to look for Daniel and his friends and put them to death. Daniel, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah. Yeah, I'm going to use their Hebrew names and stick to what God called them at the beginning. They didn't attend the meeting. Bet they're sorry they missed that one right now. But I guess it sort of makes sense, because guess what? They weren't magicians. They weren't enchanters. They weren't sorcerers, nor were they astrologers. But you know what they are now? They're now on the most wanted list of King Nebuchadnezzar because they're about to be executed. And just for a moment, I want you to put yourself in Daniel's shoes, in these guys' shoes. How would you respond to this? Okay, first response, time to get out of Dodge, right? I'm afraid. I'm going to run. Of course, maybe I have a really brave streak or a really dumb streak in me. I'm like, oh, no, he's not. I'm going to fight him. Put up your dudes, King Nebuchadnezzar. We're going to have this out. I bet you one of those things is going to come out of your mouth. Well, that's not fair. Maybe you're frustrated. I mean, after all, they didn't even invite you to the party. If you're going to hold me responsible, shouldn't have you at least given me my shot to tell you whether this is how this is going to work? But the truth be known, if Daniel and his friends are going to survive this one, they're going to have to take a stand. But it's not the stand that we usually think about. They, my friends, are going to have to stand humble. Now, before we can stand humble, we need to know what humble is. And we have seen this definition before. And you will probably see it, I don't know, once every couple of years is when it comes to me. Because I struggle with this definition. Because the word humble means not proud or haughty, not arrogant or assertive. And I look at that and I think, great, that's all the things I'm good at. When I first decided to come over this mountain and take a church, and some of the people were joking with me, like, well, that's going to be one intense little church because the church always turns out just like the minister. One of the elders asked me if he would like me to come over and sew seatbelts into the pews because they're going to have to hang on for the ride. And I don't think this has been a terrible bumpy ride over the years, although we've had our shares of twists, but I have come to realize that maybe the humble problem in the church begins right here. Right here. In this spot, this person standing right here, I struggle with this word humble. Because humble means not proud, haughty, or arrogant, or assertive, but it also means reflecting, expressing, or offending, or offered in a spirit of deference or submission. Great, those are all the things I'm not good at. I don't defer very easily, and I certainly don't submit very easy. I do not like the words I quit. I'm not very good at it. You know, when I began to think about this and I began to look, I'm like, well, how often is humble really talked about? It can't be that important. 73 times humble, the word we translate humble, is used directly in the Bible. Another 15 times humility, which is the act of being humble, is used. And that doesn't even count all the synonyms for the word humble. That's just that word. That's a lot of humble, folks. I think this is probably something that we want to stop and take a look at. And as a matter of fact, if you remember, when we went to the Pharisees, this was one of their struggles. They did not know how to be humble. They were full of pride. This was something that Jesus preached. Luke chapter 14, verse 11, "For all those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted." This is something that Jesus lived. Matthew chapter 11, verse 29. "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls." Maybe this is why my wife is always in such a tizzy. Maybe my soul can't rest because I have a humble problem, folks. Now, we don't usually think about humble and take a stand, right? When I say the word humble, you don't usually think about the person that's going to stand up for anything. And that's because we have the wrong perception of humble. Humble does not make you a doormat. Okay? If you let people just walk all over top of you for no logical reason, that does not make you humble. Humble does not mean you're a punching bag. It doesn't mean, you know, Jesus said, turn the other cheek. He doesn't say something that'll beat you to a pulp. Okay? Humble does not mean that you just have to keep taking and taking and taking and taking. It's not about being punched over and over and over again. You're not here to prove how big of a beating you can take. It does not mean that you sit in silence. It doesn't mean that just because you're humble, you can't say anything. You can't have an opinion. You have to sit there and just say, okay, whatever, I'm going to be humble. Okay, okay. A humble approach means submit, not means to submit to authority, not surrender your values. There's a line in the sand here that, yes, I am supposed to be humble and I'm supposed to be submissive, but you also understand the ultimate person I have to be humble toward and submit to, his name is God. And so when you get to that line in the sand and you have the choice, now do I humble myself and submit to the authority of the land, or do I humble myself to God and stand before the authority and say, I'm not going to surrender my values, folks? That's humble. So Daniel is approached with this idea that now he must be humble because he's got a job to do, and it begins with this humble approach. We're back over in Daniel chapter 2, verses 14 through 15, and Daniel's humble approach begins with a humble conversation. When Arioch, the commander of the great guard, had gone out to put to death the wise men of Babylon, Daniel spoke to him with wisdom and tact. He asked the king's officer, why did the king issue such a harsh decree? Arioch then explained the matter to Daniel. So Daniel comes face to face with his arrester. Remember what this man's got a license to do, right? He could kill Daniel on the spot and the king's going to give him a trophy for it. So Daniel's got to have a conversation. And I love Daniel, folks. Talk about humble. Daniel did not debate him about justice. In Daniel's little explanation, do you see him say, well, that's not fair? Daniel is not trying to get justice to say, you know what, you have no right to kill me. It's not fair. He didn't try to cut a deal with him to escape. He didn't try to slide him some money under the table. He didn't try to reason with him. He didn't try to explain to him what was going on. He didn't do any of that. It says that he spoke with wisdom and tact. Wisdom is the ability to discern inner qualities and relationships. Tact is a keen sense of what to do or say in order to maintain good relationships with others and avoid offense. I like those two words. You know why? The definitions both connect to the relationship. And Daniel is standing before his arrester, and he is trying to build a relationship with him. He doesn't say he's trying to argue with him. He doesn't try to convince him not to kill him. He said, will you please, if you're going to kill me, okay, but at least could you explain to me, because I wasn't there, why you're going to do it. And this arrester now has to sit there and make sense of what Nebuchadnezzar has requested him to do. See, humble speech connects both saying and right, and both involves saying the right thing in a manner that people will listen to you. I think a lot of times we forget this in our churches. We forget this in this pulpit sometimes. Sometimes I can say the right thing, but it doesn't matter if I said the right thing because guess what I did? I said it the wrong way and nobody's listening to me anymore. Sometimes I can get everybody's attention and you know what? You're listening to me and out of my mouth comes the exact wrong thing to say. Both of those situations come from my own arrogance, folks. Because a humble person stops. And a humble person thinks, how can I relay what needs to be said, what's supposed to be said, in a way that you will understand it in such a way that we can form a relationship around it. This is how Jesus dealt with the world, didn't he? With wisdom and a little tact. And at the end of this conversation, Daniel realizes there's no way around it. He's going to have a humble confrontation. At this, Daniel went to the king and asked for time so that he might interpret the dream for him. Take me to your king, sir. Are you kidding me? You're crazy, right? You have a death wish, right, Daniel? Look, the king is the one that sent me to kill you, and now you want an audience with the king. Absolutely. You know why? Humble people are not fearful of conflict. That's the picture that we've got wrong. Just because I have a humble spirit doesn't mean that I have to avoid conflict. As a matter of fact, humility will oftentimes bring me into this idea of conflict. Daniel knew the only way to fix this was to get in front of the king. And when he got there, he didn't try to give the king a song and dance. He didn't try to say, well, you know, king, what you did, that ain't right. You know what? I'm doing the best I can. I'm putting in the hours, and now you're making this kind of ultimatum. Oh, no, don't you love what Daniel said? Did? He looked at the king in the eye, and he said face to face, king, if you want answers, you're going to have to give me time to find them. Wow. I thought these guys were supposed to be assertive. He's not being assertive. He's being humble. He's like, king, I don't have your answer. But if you kill me, then guess what? I'm still not going to have your answer. So you've got to at least be willing to give me a little time. And that's important for us to remember because humble people are not know-it-alls. If you've got all the answers, that is not humility. That's arrogance. If you think you can always fix people's lives by just telling them what they need to do, that's not humble. It's something, but it ain't humble. You see, humble people value the notion of research and return because they value truth more than they value opinions. So if your opinion is the thing that's all important to you, then you realize that's not humility. The question is what you're saying truth? And by truth, I mean, does it line up with what God said last week's sermon? See how these pieces begin to connect together in Daniel's life? So the king looks at Daniel. He says, fine, you can have some time. So now Daniel's got to come up with a plan. How on earth am I going to figure out what the dream said and then come back and figure out how to interpret the dream? Surprise, surprise. Here goes Daniel. Problem solving 101, a humble prayer. Then Daniel returned to his house and explained the matters to his friends, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah. He urged them to plead for mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery so that he and his friends might not be executed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. So keep in mind, this is a selfish thing that Daniel's. He's like, guys, we got to have a prayer meeting. And we got to have a prayer meeting fast. They prayed. Wow. Can I just let you know something? This is Daniel's secret sauce. I'm not going to dive real deep into this week, but I just want to let you know a strong prayer life, well, if you don't have it, you are never going to be able to live in this world and not of this world. It ain't possible, folks. If you don't have a strong prayer life, it's not going to work because you're not going to be able to get the answers that you're looking for. And let me just go one little step further. If we as a church, don't humble ourselves in prayer more often, we will never impact this world for Christ. Never. I made sure I put the word in capital on you. We're never going to be able to do it. After all, James tells us, humble yourselves before the Lord and he will lift you up. So Daniel comes and he says, guys, we know where to find the answer, right? Let's go to God. Let's pray about this. Let's ask God to give us the answer. Let's get God to tell us what's going on here. They had such a relationship when they got there, there wasn't even a second thought about what needs to come first. Humility is all about this idea of prayer. And well, God comes through. He does. And he gives them some humble praise. During the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel. Now, I got to tell you something. Now, here I'm with Daniel. God is constantly trying to talk to me in the middle of the night. And sometimes it's very obnoxious, but I do now know why. Because it's the only time I shut up to listen to him. Okay? It's the only time I'm laying in the bed and I'm there. God's like, finally, you're not willing to talk. Just listen for a little bit. So in the middle of the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel. Then Daniel praised the God of heaven. Daniel's going to give the king his answer. But before Daniel gave the king of Babylon his answer, he stopped to praise the king of all. And there's something about this. Because how often do we pray for things from God? We pray for God's guidance. We pray for God's wisdom. We pray for God's moving. And God shows up. Well, I sure am glad I made it through that one. Whew. And we miss this step. And this is a lack of humility. Because somehow after the problem is all solved, then we go back and we figure out how I fixed the problem, right? That's who we are, folks. This is how we solve our problems, and then we often forget. When God answers a humble heart always takes time to say thanks. So over the years, I want you to think about that prayer list we cram on the back of a bulletin that we put out in emails. How many prayer requests have come on and off that request? And man, when it's a prayer request, we want that thing at the top of the list, and over and over and over again, we want people to pray for it. When God answers, you never hear about it. Matter of fact, oftentimes God answers and they stay on the prayer list for a few more weeks because guess what? Nobody bothers to say, man, God took care of that for me. You realize what that's a sign of, right? That's our arrogance, folks. Yeah, it's okay to pray to God when I have a need, but when I have nothing, I'm all good, God. I'll let you know next time I need something. But I got this one covered, but thanks for at least listening to me. So Daniel's got his answer. Let's face it. Okay, I got to tell you something. If somebody had threatened my life, and then I got the answer, and nobody else in the world had the answer but me, I got to tell you, I'd let this king twist in the wind for a little bit. Okay? Because he's troubled in heart, and he's losing sleep over this, and he wants his answer. And I believe I got some negotiating power now, and so I could come in there and strike a deal. I got your answer, king, but what's in it for me? Not Daniel. Daniel shows up before the king in verses 27 through 28, and this is what he said. Daniel replied, "No wise man, enchanter, magician, or diviner can explain the king the mystery he has asked about. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. He has shown King Nebuchadnezzar what will happen in the days to come. Your dream and the vision was passed through your mind as you were laying in bed, and these," and sorry, I'm still not interested in what the dream was about, nor am I interested in the interpretation, at least not for this sermon series. But I sure am interested in Daniel's delivery when he takes his answer to the world. And he starts out, did my batteries go? There we go. He reveals the dream came from God. That's impressive. Remember who we stand in front of. He's standing in front of a pagan king. Now, the pagan king believes in a lot of gods. But Daniel looks at him and says, "King, the dream came from God. Therefore, the answer must also come from God. So when your enchanters and your magicians and your sorcerers and your astrologers and all the other people looked at you and said, there is no one on this planet that can answer this, that can solve your dream for you, they were right. Because this came from God, therefore the answer must come from God." And then he proceeds to tell the king not only the interpretation of the dream, he does the impossible. He tells the king what he dreamt. That way now the king knows, I'm not blowing smoke. I'm not making something up as we go, because I'm going to tell you what you dreamt. I know all about your statue, and I know what God wanted you to learn from that statue. And I love exactly what Daniel does. He takes zero credit for the answer. I got to tell you, me, I just said, you know, king, if you had a relationship with God like I have, you could have got this answer for yourself. I know if it were me, like, man, I laid up all night long praying for this thing. You don't know how many hours I spent. This is like a Rice Krispie treat, right? Spent hours making it, but it was really easy for the end. He just had to go to bed. Pray and go to bed. That's all he had to do. We could have made himself look so big to the king, but Daniel says, you know what? This ain't my interpretation. This ain't my answer, folks. Instead, what did Daniel do? He took the moment to introduce the king to God. That's a humble heart. Instead of taking credit for what God had revealed to him, he said, now, I'm going to tell your interpretation. And then, by the way, when I'm done telling you the interpretation, you're going to listen to me because I'm going to tell you all about God. What a moment. What a moment. And from that, you know what he gets? I love this. He gets a humbled adversary. Verses 46 through 47. Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell prostrate before Daniel and paid him honor and ordered an offering and incense to be presented to him. The king said to Daniel, surely your God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings and the revealer of mysteries, for you were able to reveal this mystery. Now don't fool yourself. King Nebuchadnezzar, he hasn't become a believer, folks. As a matter of fact, in his own words, he sees Daniel's God as just nothing more than a god amongst gods. And when we turn the page next week and we get to chapter 3, so by the way, that's your preview for what we're doing next week. We'll be in Daniel chapter 3 next week when we turn the page and we get to the fiery furnace, and we're going to find out that King Nebuchadnezzar is right back where he started. He's thumbing his nose at God. I'll explain it next week. But for the moment, he's humbled. And that's a start, because nobody follows God with an arrogant heart. Wow. So how does that change my world? Verses 48 through 49 read, then the king placed Daniel in a high position and lavished him with many gifts on him. He made him ruler over the entire province of Babylon and placed him in charge of all of his wise men. Moreover, at Daniel's request, the king appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, now he uses their Babylonian name, administrators over the province of Babylon, while Daniel himself remained at the royal court. Jesus tells us, blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. By the way, if you're looking for your synonym for humble, meek, that's the word. That's what they're looking for. Daniel did not inherit the world, but his humility gave him massive influence. Did you not read the list of what he's going to get? Let's forget about the money for a second. Daniel is now being elevated. He gets massive influence. The next time there's a party, Daniel's going to get invited to it, because guess now who's running the party? Daniel. Guess who's now in charge of the wise man that's going to be teaching the Babylonian culture? Daniel. His humility has given him so much in the form of influence in the world. And yeah, the king made him rich, although Daniel didn't really ask for the money, right? This was kind of like an afterthought for Daniel. You never hear him say, oh, king, thank you for all the money you gave me. And then the king gave him power in the world. It isn't enough that I'm just going to be an influencer. Man, I've got the power. If I don't want it taught, I'm in charge now. If I don't want it done that way, I'm in charge now. But he's in charge not because he's great. He's in charge because he's humble. And you know what? Him and his four buddies, whom he hires himself some good administrators, they are going to change Babylon forever. As a matter of fact, when Babylon falls and the next empire comes in, Daniel is still there and he's still doing the same thing over and over and over again. Daniel takes the humble route and he changes the world around him. And you know what that means, right? Standing humble means living powerful. You know why I don't live humble? Because I want to be in control. You know why I struggle with humility? Because I don't want to get taken advantage of. You know why me and humility don't dance together? Because if I do that, that means I've got to let go. But God says, you know what? You willing to get in the dance with me, and you're willing to let dance that humble dance with me? I'll show you what it means to live powerful. You will change your world if you just choose to stand humble with God.